You're listening to the 8 for Comics podcast, sponsored by StashMyComics.com and our local comic book shop in Roanoke, Virginia, BNDComics.com. And now, here's your hosts, Matt Barrett and Neil Rickman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 8 for Comics podcast. You're listening to episode number 1. I am your host, Matt Barrett, and with me is
Neil Rickman.
That's right. And Neil and I, we like to talk about comics. And every week, we come on this show, we swap a couple books, and we talk about the books that we have read. Now, this week, I chose from Neil's collection, Beasts of Burden by Dark Horse Comics. This is a one-shot based upon, I guess, a three-part series back in Dark Horse Presents. And then Neil, out of my collection, picks The Defenders number 1. And I know that Neil hates me now because The Defenders is an ongoing series, and I got away with the one-shot. So I liked my book, he liked the book I gave him, but now that has cost him financially.
I don't know if it cost me anything but just a little bit of money, sure, but what I get back is just amazing. And of course, my comic shop, B&D, they just love me for it. So Defenders is just one of those books that makes you want to go out there and grab it.
That's right, and at the beginning of the episode, you probably heard me mention our two sponsors, StashMyComics.com, as well as B&D Comics. Be sure to visit their websites, StashMyComics.com, and B&DComics.com. And you can also go to our website. We have a website. It is called Ape4Comics.com, and there you can subscribe to this podcast, and you can also check out some other things we got going on there. But we're not going to beat around the bush. We're going to get into these reviews, and then at the end of this show, we'll do what we call a special segment. And what is that special segment this week?
That's going to be where we're talking a little bit about what things that we wish were still around. And I think our topic of discussion is going to be about Secret Six, if I'm not wrong.
I think it will heavily revolve around Secret Six, yes. And some other books that might have been canceled either a long time ago or just recently that we would like to see back. All right. Well, let's get into the reviews. Comic Swap. Now we're going to start with Defenders number 1. And Neil, why did you choose this book? Was it just upon my recommendation, or is this one that's been on your radar for a while?
It's been on my radar for quite some time, but also your recommendation kind of drove the last nail in. I was like, okay, I've got to get on this. It's Fraction dealing with Iron Fist once again. If you haven't read Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker's run on Immortal Iron Fist, drop what you're doing, run out, and grab it now. It was just phenomenal.
All right, I'll be right back. Yeah, because that's one I haven't read. So, okay, well, in this book, we are dealing with, obviously, the Defenders. And in this version of the group, you've got Namor, you've got Silver Surfer, you've got the Red She-Hulk, Iron Fist, and Doctor Strange. Now, there's no Hulk in this except in the very beginning. I know a lot of people are disappointed that the Hulk is not a part of this Defenders, but let's face it, the Hulk is pulled in so many different directions, it might be nice for him to lay off this book for a while.
I would say this, as a, you know, the Hulk is my favorite classic character, maybe, period. Out of any of the publishers, out of just anything, I love the Hulk, the classic Bruce Banner, Green Goliath relationship. However, that being said, Matt Fraction's done a fantastic job in breathing just a new kind of life into a lot of these characters that he's running in this book, and he's won me over with his Red She-Hulk that he's put in there. I've been a real pessimist on the Red Hulk type thing. I've been mad that they've been getting the good writers treatment, but now I've kind of put that aside with this. This seems to work very well. He's putting us inside everyone's mindset in this book, and I don't, you know, reading this thing, I don't think I can recall a better first issue in a while. I mean, it really does what a first issue should do.
Yeah, and I think obviously his strength is is in how he writes his characters. And within this first issue, you like just about every character that's in it. And that's a hard thing to do all within one issue. You mentioned She-Hulk. She was not one that I was familiar with at all. I mean, of course, I'm familiar with who the She-Hulk actually is. But the whole Red Hulk thing, when I got back into comics just a few years ago, was confusing to me. But he's got her, you know, at the very beginning, drinking at this bar. And of course, if anybody who knows anything about the Hulks, they have a hard time getting intoxicated, much like Andre the Giant.
yeah.
It takes them much longer than the average human being.
Many pints will be had before they get to their limit.
Correct. So we start off with Doctor Strange basically having these... What is happening here? Is he having visions? It's been so long since I've read this.
Well, first off, he's with some kind of co-ed going on there, and then he's having some visions, and it's a very interesting take on Stephen Strange. And I think one of the big deals with this book is that a lot of the characters in it are all powerful beings. I mean, the Defenders isn't a huge team as compared to, say, the X-Men, which are, you know, countless number of mutants, or the Avengers, which has grown into, like, it was big at one time, and now it's just, like, everybody's an Avenger.
Yeah.
So he's having these visions, and he, to make a long story short without spoiling everything, he finds that he has to put this team together. The Hulk is in it just shortly to basically tell them, hey, things are really screwed up. Can you give me a hand here? And so we got Namor acting like a jerk but joining the team reluctantly. We've got Silver Surfer being very strange and odd, which is a really cool take on him. I like that Matt Fraction is writing him like a very strange but wise alien.
Yeah, the Surfer is one that that needs some work, I think. And if someone could bring him into the modern times and really make him work, it's an excellent character that just has been left alone too long, I think.
Exactly. And then, of course, at the end, we get our taste of Iron Fist. They all sort of, he comes to Iron Fist in a sort of dream, and Iron Fist decides that he doesn't really have anything better to do, so he joins the group, and they're off on some crazy, you know, wacky adventures, and that's what Matt Fraction is good at doing, writing, you know, good character development with these B and C list type characters, and taking them on all sorts of odd adventures that are really off the wall sort of ideas and concepts.
I would say Dotson does a great job on that art. I was very impressed at some of the best work I've seen in a little while. I mean, not that Dotson ever does a bad job, but I thought this was great. And the colors that Sonia Obak, if I'm saying it right, mm-hmm. have in this book really set that artwork off.
Yeah, I should have noted that at the beginning. Obviously, you know, Matt Fraction, the writer, Terry Dodson, the penciler. I'm assuming this is his wife, Rachel Dodson, as the inker. Sonia Obak as the colorist, VC's Clayton Cowles as the letterer. Yeah, this overall, I mean, this is a home run team. Everything in this is not just solid, but better than solid. And this is one of those books that you would love to see the whole team stick around on this. I'm kind of midway through this series, but I haven't really been paying much attention to who's been hopping on and off the art. So I'm assuming that they've been keeping this team together for the most part.
I sure hope so. One of the things that will kill a series quick is the changes that come through a team. If they can keep that strong cohesion, we could see a great run on Defenders and bring in a team that just hasn't been touted in a while out.
And that's one thing that has me a tiny bit worried is that, you know, we are almost a year into this. I guess we're 9 books into it coming September. And I know Matt Fraction is going to be writing, I think, Fantastic Four and FF, if I'm not mistaken. So he's going to have a pretty full plate. I'm hoping that they don't just all in off end this book in exchange for some more, you know, Marvel now.
I'm a little worried about it. The only work I've tasted from Fraction that I wasn't a big fan of was Thor. And I'm worried about what he's going to do with Fantastic Four coming off of Hickman's run. And Hickman and Epting, they've done a phenomenal job over there. I mean, Fantastic Four has lived up to the name for quite some time under their helm. And honestly, I find Fraction better at the not I mean, not the quite the pinnacle character. He does great with B and C characters. And these characters, if you look at them, shouldn't be B and C. They have huge amounts of power, and it all goes back down to being fleshed out. I don't know that these characters have ever had a writer really make you feel in touch with them quite like he has, such as Iron Fist reading comics. We can all, in this issue, Iron Fist, and many times, is just trying to read a comic. So it's speaking to us. I mean, there's a kindred spirit on this team, and he's the greatest martial arts perhaps ever.
Yeah. So, scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this book?
The scale of 1 to 10, for being a great introductory issue, making me run out and pick up all the trades, and I'll probably start singles at some point, I really think I'm going to lean on it. I'm not going to give a 10 right off the bat my first show. I'm tempted to, because it's done the job a comic should do. It's entertained me. It's made me want more. It's made me, you know, curious as to everything that's going to happen from here on with every character. So I'm going to go ahead and say a solid 9 for me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. The only reason it might not get a perfect 10 is that really we didn't, it wasn't a one and done. It was building towards a bigger story. So it's hard to give something a 10 when you don't really know, you know, what's going on. Typically, you'll give the 6th book or something in a series a number 10 if it's got a really good ending. So that's Defenders number 1. Next, what do we have next?
Beasts of Burden.
And this was one that you recommended I read because you're a big Dark Horse guy.
I have become thus.
I have not read a lot of Dark Horse. We've talked a little bit about our affection for the Goon. I've read a bunch of those trades, but
phenomenal.
This book was interesting to me because it has cute little animals on it, but you were right. This is not a kid's book.
By no means. When I was working at the shop, we had our all ages section there, and I made sure that if any parent ever asked, I was like, oh, no. And now, if you're an animal lover, you might be interested, but definitely not for the kiddos.
Right. Now, this is written by Evan Dorkin, art by Jill Thompson, letters by Jason Arthur, and I'll tell you, Jill Thompson's art is really, really good, and the fact that it seems like she's doing pencils, inking, and coloring is impressive.
And it's watercolors.
Hmm.
From what I understand, I could be wrong, but it looks very much like watercolors, and I think that's what I had read about her work and what it was done in. I'm not sure how she goes about the process, but I'm sure it takes a little while. Most indies, they take their time a little more than, you know, our mainstream titles.
You're right. I mean, I didn't really notice the watercolor effect for whatever reason. It's subtle enough that it doesn't overtake the whole book, but there's nice little washes all over the place. But for those of you that don't know, Beasts of Burden was originally part of Dark Horse Presents. It followed issues, what did they say down here? Do you remember offhand which issues?
Not right off. And the thing is, with Dark Horse Presents, I didn't keep track of it because there's a little bit of price, and I'm not sure I'm going to be into every book. But they've been on fire lately, so I'm tempted to pick those up as they come out.
Okay, here. Well, I have it in my notes here. Issues 4, 6, and 8 from Dark Horse Presents. So they basically pulled these stories out of there, put it into one book. And this is 3 separate stories. Now, the first one we have is Food Run, and this was my favorite because it has this interesting little green gremlin that runs around kind of naked-like, and he reminds me of a short version of the Grinch.
It's very, either Seuss-inspired. It looks like something out of a Shrek movie, maybe. Chasing chickens.
Yep, he's chasing chickens, and the cat by the name of Orphan and the dog by the name of Rex are chasing after him. I guess they're charged with taking care of these kind of beasts. He's a goblin, I guess is what they call
him. Well, they kind of deal with all kinds of supernatural ongoings in their neighborhood. I mean, I think some other dog like might live there, but they deal with the supernatural ongoings. Not every dog or cat is suited for this work.
Right. So have
it's
you
a weird concept.
Have they done anything else like go after Bigfoot or Loch Ness or anything like this?
They've had all sorts of, they've had ghosts. I mean, you've got a goblin there. And in that issue, as I'm sure you'll mention, we've got like a think there's some kind of basilisk even. I mean, it's just crazy.
And these are talking animals, and they don't always have the nicest things to say, which is part of the reason that makes this not a kid's book. But they're chasing this goblin all over the place, and he's doing all kinds of shenanigans to stop them, pulling back tree branches, and he actually winds up choking this cat, and the cat scratches him up pretty bad. But the funny part is they're sort of in their own world, and then this car pulls up, and it's the Doberman's owner, and he's like, get on back in the car, and yeah, it kind of breaks up the whole thing.
You get the idea that he's not the nicest of owners.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting. I'm wondering if they'll ever go into that, and perhaps they'll bust him out of that situation somehow. But it is interesting. It's almost like in Toy Story when, you know, the owners of the toys come in, and all of a sudden everything that was going on stops, no matter what kind of catastrophe was happening.
Exactly. And so they basically get rid of this goblin. They injure him very badly, and he has to go back to his family with no chickens in hand, and he's very disappointed. And you're right, the animals do mention about how they're glad, or at least Orphan mentions that how he's glad he doesn't have an owner like Rex is. So then we move on to the second story, which is story time. And this old sheepdog is telling this story about this brave dog by the name of Byton. Is that right?
Right. And that story, that was my favorite. That's my favorite Beast of Burden story maybe they've ever done. That short story really, I thought, was pretty epic for the short amount of pages it takes up. They did a great job of making that feel a lot longer.
Yeah, and he's basically this big mastiff, and he, along with his owner, Alric, they're these sort of great warriors, and they're fighting in all these battles, and you get the sense that he's just as much a warrior and hero as the people. And then we sort of fast forward into this dragon that, much like Medusa, will turn people to stone if you look at it. And the brave dog goes in blindfold and all and is able to defeat the dragon. But lo and behold, at the end, I guess the blindfold falls off and he turns to stone anyways.
Unfortunately.
Yes. So a sad tale, but a heroic tale. And the sheepdog is telling this story to these little puppies. So it's kind of endearing. It's like a fairy tale for the little dogs.
Right. And there's a whole secret meaning behind this. They relate a lot of what's happened there as to why some of the things are they are in the world today. And it leaves a very interesting legend, mythos there that even the other dogs are wondering, did it really happen? And the old sheepdog in that story, he's in the books quite a bit. He's kind of like their shaman or their sage. He knows a lot more. He's the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the story. You know, he really, he knows the ways of the Force. He's teaching the others how to deal with these supernatural ongoings in their neighborhood.
And of course, you've got your very distinctive breeds of dog here. You've got the beagle, you've got the little golden retriever puppies, the sheepdog, the pug, and that they basically end the story, like you said, with them wondering if this really happened or not. And then that brings us to the last tale, which is, it's kind of a dark and disturbing tale. They see, the dogs see a bunch of these sheep in the field, and the guard dog, the dog who is guarding them, sort of threatens them, and the sheep are like, "No, no, it's okay, they're cool." And all of a sudden, the beagle starts going nuts.
Well, there's a reason for that. You might not want to go too far into why he goes nuts, because okay, the ending of that really caught me off guard. Like, I really didn't know what was going. It caught me. Some people might get it, but I was sucked into it, and I really didn't catch what was happening until they explained it.
Yeah, we'll hold off on the spoilers for that particular one. Let's just say the last page is definitely shocking. And it winds up being a good idea to do that for the story, because it's jarring, and it leaves you kind of horrified but kind of wanting to know more about the adventures of these dogs. So overall, out of 10 score, I would give this a solid, like, 8, you know, maybe 8.5. The art was really good. I liked the short stories. I only wanted to just sort of know more. I particularly was a fan of the cat Orphan, and I wanted to see more of him and the dog, you know, chasing these supernatural characters.
That's one thing I would ask you. How did you find that as a jumping on point? Because I'd already read some of the story, but I thought that might be a good jump on point for folks to get interested in.
Yeah, particularly the first story. I think it might have even been a stronger title had the first story just been dealing with the cat and the dog chasing supernatural things, and just have the whole thing be like that, and then maybe throw the other stories in like a collection or something. But I mean, they were all three great stories, and you know, you're not going to spend better money for $350, you know, for three really good stories with really good art.
Yeah, so. I thought it was really long for $350 in comics these days, and of course that's great. We're all looking at the price point with today's world, and most books is trying to come up to $399. So, yeah, I'd probably give it a solid 8 as well. I mean, I love it. I'm biased. It's animals. It's comics. It's everything I'm into.
Yeah, if it was an ongoing with Orphan and the Doberman Rex, this is definitely one that I would have a hard time not adding to my list. So, all right. Well, that was our two books that we chose this week. Next week, I have no idea what we're going to choose yet.
Me either. I've got a slew of books to pick up from B&D this weekend. I'm looking very much forward to.
Okay. I also have a shipment coming in, and I hope to make a trip down there sometime within the next week or so as well. All right, well, we'll wrap up reviews and go right into the special feature.
1, 2, 3. SmashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.
And this is books that are canceled that we wish were back. Of course, we mentioned earlier how much we would be talking about Secret Six, because this is the book that we most want to see come back.
I got a little sick to my stomach when I found out it wasn't going to still be going after the new 52 in DC. I know a lot of people are very happy with the Suicide Squad, and you've talked to me a little bit about that. But I have a little bit of resent and refuse to pick it up because it's just not Secret Six.
It's definitely, yeah. The main reason why I like it, why I like Suicide Squad, is it's one of those unpredictable books that has a couple of my favorite Secret Six characters in it, as well as Harley Quinn. So that book works for me on the level of, okay, I get Harley Quinn, I get Deadshot, I get King Shark, I get some other C and D listers. I have no idea who's going to live or die from issue to issue. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it can't fill the void that Secret Six left. I started picking up Secret Six like right around issue 25 or 26, so I was at the end of it.
Oh, wow.
And was really super disappointed. I went back and got the trades, but slowly kept picking up, going, oh, we're almost to 32.
Now, did you start from the Villains United, or did you just start from the straight Secret Six title?
I had read a little bit of the Villains United, but primarily I just started from the Secret Six.
Right. I had dug on it ever since Villains United. Like, I happened into that, and that I had no idea what it was going to be. It surprised.
Well, and wasn't it like a six-part series before the original series started?
Right, and it was a part of an event that I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but it was one of the crises, I believe, and the Secret Six, basically, it was, I think, when a lot of the villains were starting to have a war with themselves, and Lex Luthor and all them were trying to pick up the Six, and the Six kind of spat at both sides, if I remember correctly.
I remember now reading that trade, and it was, you're right, they I think they took all the villains and put them in, like, a different dimension or planet and basically made them just stay there and duke it out. And, of course, you had Lex Luthor on one side. And I want to say, wasn't Joker the other?
I can't remember so much as to say. It could have been. I need to go back and read those. I've been aiming to dig through my stash for a while and kind of sort out some old ones that I'd like to go back and read, and then some that I might just donate.
Yeah, I picked up that trade at my library in South Carolina, and I loved it. But I didn't ever really put the two together until later on I read sort of the history of Secret Six. But obviously, you know, that was Gail Simone's baby. Not only did the fans really dig it, but it was really critically acclaimed by her peers as well. So that's what made it really disappointing to see it go.
She's a very nice lady. I actually wrote her at one point, and I was on Facebook of all places, and I'm like, yeah, right, she's not going to write me back. She totally messaged me back. I had some questions about some ongoings that involved Catman or, you know, Thomas Blake, because I, you know, it's my favorite guy from the team. Because if you guys want to know a little bit about me, I love animals. I'm into some animal conservation as well as comics. So of course, the character of Thomas Blake spoke to me, and she just explained to me right off some things that were going on and put my concerns at ease. And I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I've heard that she's nice. She's somebody that I would like to meet one of these days if I ever get around to spending the money to go to a real con.
Well, I mean, there's real cons on the East Coast, but I've never heard of her coming to one that I could make.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, we've had some really good creators on this side, but there are some that, you know, they're just kind of like your holy grail because you can't get to them.
Right. Well, and the thing I like about Gail Simone is that the way that she develops her characters, much like, you know, we were talking about Matt Fraction earlier, but it's the little things that she does with these characters that make you instantly be able to relate to them and like them. And she puts quite a bit of humor in the Secret Six books, but there is that other side, the darkness that's to it as well. And she's, you know, she's just one of my favorite writers. And I hate hearing people lump her in with, she's one of the best female writers. No, she's one of the best writers, period.
That's very true. I'm a little guilty of that because I was like, hey, the females, you know, she's really showing it for them. But, yeah, when you put it down to it, she beats out a lot of writers, period.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, she is a woman, and there are very few women, so of course that's going to get talked about. But if you just saw her write something and you didn't put her name on it and you put it right next to something that Bendis or Kirkman or any of the big guys are writing, she would stand right up with those people. Easy.
For sure.
But yeah, Secret Six, they canceled it. I've been begging DC to bring it back through Twitter. I tweet them quite a bit. Not that they're listening, but at one point I found a link online of some guy that had a petition, and I tweeted it out and for everybody to sign this thing, and it got a ton of whatever the Twitter thing is when people retweet. I got like, you know, 30-some retweets, and this was – I was only following like a couple hundred people at the time, and even Gail retweeted it. And ever since then, I've been begging them to do it. But
so she even retweeted it.
Exactly,
that's,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, she's – I think she wants it back just as much as everybody else. I mean, that's her baby. I think she just really had a blast writing it, and I know she'd like to get back into it. I thought maybe when they took her off Firestorm that was maybe an indication that they were going to bring it back, but
maybe
no,
it's
such
one of their aces. I don't know. Maybe they're waiting for maybe a huge drop in sales, and then all of a sudden, Secret Six, and we all run out. Now, I don't know about that, because while it had an okay run, I mean, it was a fantastic run, but the following, I don't know if they had the huge numbers. I know at B&D, we didn't see the numbers we see in the mainstream, like, you know, Spider-Man or X-Men, the Avengers titles, but it had a cult following for sure.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a little bit of an outcry there when it went away. And I talked to a lot of the guys and gals that would come in, and you know, like, yeah, we missed Secret Six. And I was for sure when they killed a bunch of the new 52 that weren't selling, that I was like, oh, here comes Secret Six. Here it's coming. Right. Nope.
Yeah, it's disappointing, and I understand that it didn't do the numbers that they needed. But I think in the case of that book and books like Justice Society, I think they did a real disservice to longtime fans. I mean, you've already rebooted the entire thing, and the fans have been pretty good about sticking with them. If there's a couple books that the fans are really clamoring for but don't sell all that well, just put them out anyways. You know, take a hit. It's just two books. You know, take two books that are for the fans and be like, you know what, no matter what these really do in sales, we're just going to keep them, because that keeps the fans happy. And even though it's a small number, it's a number that's loud and that's very vocal. and that can do a lot of trash talking on the internet, which can bring attention.
Now, why would you think they would bring a book like Suicide Squad out when it's in the same vein, in my opinion, of Secret Six, but just not go the whole route and bring Secret Six back?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It was almost like their attempt early on. I was afraid it was just going to be a Secret Six Secret Six light rather. But I wound up really enjoying it. I was afraid that I would enjoy it just because it was the only thing I had. But I really truly like that book.
I know Harley Quinn can move books. She's got a lot of power, and I know they put her in there. I was just like, well, now you can just bring the rest of the guys along.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see her in it. I think there's a possibility. I don't know. I'm assuming they've thought of this or not, but my thought was it would be interesting to have the Suicide Squad sort of rejoin and have conflict with the Secret Six rejoin and have a conflict with Suicide Squad and maybe pull Deadshot and King Shark out of there and bring them back on the group and, you know, take Harley Quinn with them or whatever. You know, Secret Six was never always just six people. I mean,
I'm getting sick thinking about this. I want this to happen.
I mean, yeah, because, I mean, Suicide Squad can survive without Deadshot. I mean, he's sort of their main guy, yeah, but it's a great book for showing some characters that you're not otherwise going to get to read about. I don't think that he necessarily sells that book. Maybe Harley Quinn sells a book that you want back.
I got two in mind. I'm going to start off talking a little bit about one called Bad Dog that was from Image. And I don't know that it's being canceled. It's just kind of one of those Image titles that just stopped. And it's about a werewolf bounty hunter. It's about the weirdest, lewdest, just most insane book this side of the goon that you could read. It's a tale of depravity, but it also had a lot of interesting points. And if you're a werewolf fan like me, then, you know, it had that aspect to it. Although the art was a little weird. A werewolf in a cowboy cap and some jeans, it's different. But it won me over pretty quick.
Now, how long ago did this come out?
I can't even remember. It's been that long. I mean, the issues started coming like ultimate issues back when Miller and Hitch were putting them out. I mean, you get one every 6 months, and then finally you just didn't get any from these guys. I think there was only four issues that made it out. And I'm trying to think exactly who was on it. I think it might have been a Joe Kelly project. Which I'm pretty sure that's the name on it. But they just had a really good – it was almost like Fear and Loathing with werewolves. I mean, werewolves and short men, it's odd to be, you know, kind. But the other one I was going to mention is Battle Chasers. That's a long time ago. It was a project done by – it was a cliffhanger. Remember when Cliffhanger was Image? It had, like, Danger Girl. And then Battle Chasers was its big deal from Joe – Madura, I think I'm saying his name correctly. I apologize if I'm not. But it's prime for a comeback. You look at Joe Mad went on to work on the video game industry, and he has. He's come out with the Fantastic Darksiders game, and I played the original. The second one just came out, and it's got some great reviews behind it, and I would love to play it sometime when it's more budgetable. But his art and the whole feeling behind that, I mean, if he would have put that book back out when World of Warcraft was at its prime, and all that, and he still could do it. I mean, it's just ready for it to happen if he would just do the work. But he's too much of a gamer, I think. He procrastinates a lot.
And now, how old is Battle Chasers?
My gosh, I was in high school. I don't want to date myself too much here. So we're looking at, let me see, I can't do math anymore either. It's bad. I'm 32, left high school when I would say it came out when I was around 16. So help me out with the math there.
So probably what, 96 or something?
Somewhere around there.
Okay.
It was just like the greatest book ever. Everybody loved it. It's back when I was more into art than I was story, which is totally flip-flop now. But it was still a great story, and the art he does is just big, action-packed, over the top. And the video games he's doing now is great because it's all his art design. So it's like the panels of those comics would really look like this coming off the page. Unfortunately, it's not Battle Chasers, the comic, the video game, which okay, let's do that and bring the comic back out.
Right. Hey, I'm sure there's more money in video games, which is probably why you haven't seen it. But like, you're right, if they had the video game out, then they could certainly go back and do the comic as well. Well, I was going to go 2099. I talk a lot about
Snap
2099 stuff.
I love 2099.
I do too. It's anybody who has not read any of the 2099 stuff, give it a shot. There's lots to choose from. There's, I guess, the Ravager, which is the one that I haven't checked out yet. I've checked out the Hulk. I've checked out Spider-Man. But Doom 2099 is by far my favorite. It's got kind of that apocalyptic feel to it, that Blade Runner kind of thing going on. It, you know, the thing about that book is it's so ahead of its time because this was like, what, early 90s, 92, 93?
Somewhere around there.
This was before the internet really exploded, and they had this grasp already upon things that were going to come. There's this hacker guy that is surfing the web, and it's really bizarre because this was just as the web was starting out, and he starts having access to all this information, and it starts referencing a lot of things that are true now about the internet. Almost like if you go back and read it, you're like, wow, this is really happening now. How did they know this before the internet was even really had really come into its own?
Because Doom has a time travel platform. We all know that.
And he was able to give this information to the writers, I guess.
It's really Al Gore. That's who Doom is. He invented the internet. Yeah, that's bad. Sorry. That was not meant to be political at all, by the way. I just always found that off just comment. I just go back to that sometimes.
Of course, now if they couldn't do 2099 because that's not far enough away. It'd have to be like 3099.
It'd have to be, why don't we just do Future Guy, you know, Future Doom, or we don't have to put I liked when video games would put like 20XX or, you know, 30XX, or you don't know what year it is. It's going to happen, though.
Nowadays, anytime you're doing anything futuristic, I think we've learned that you have to do it much farther than you think, because everybody thought by now there'd be flying cars. So
mine does at certain speeds, but it's a Hyundai.
Wow, I didn't know Hyundais could do that.
They're not supposed to, but they're so light and cheaply made. I mean, the certain hill, you'll just take right off.
This is an off-the-topic comment, but I was thinking about all of the various Defenders books. I don't know if you've ever read the Secret Defenders.
Secret Defenders, no.
Okay, in the late 90s, there was a Secret Defenders book, and I thought, oh, you know, there's all the there's Secret Avengers, Secret Defenders. I was like, what if there was a Public Defenders about lawyers with superhero powers?
Well, that is, you know, She-Hulk would helm that one. I mean, no doubt.
She-Hulk and of course, Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. Matt Murdock. I can't believe I didn't think of him right off the bat. I mean, the current run of Daredevil being so phenomenal. And, I mean, it's had some great runs in the past years, so.
I wasn't crazy about the – I went back and tried to read some of the – who was the one that wrote the Daredevil that everybody liked so much before all the dark stuff that –
There was Bendis, and then off his run came Brubaker. And is that who you're talking about?
I think it's the Bendis stuff. I picked up a trade that everybody said, you have to read this from Daredevil. And I remember looking through the trade and going, wow, this seems to be just a lot about Matt Murdock being a lawyer, and very little, it was very little Daredevil at all. And usually when I see something like that, a lot of people love stuff like that. I'm out. You know, I want to see the superhero. I want to see some action. I don't have to have all that, but I don't want to just see a character study on Matt Murdock. I want to see Daredevil and Matt Murdock.
If you came into the middle of it, that'll hurt it a lot. The Bendis run was very strong. Brubaker's wasn't as strong. It was declining into Diggle's run. Andy Diggle took over from Brubaker, and then that's when it went into the Shadow Pack stuff with him running it. And he wasn't bad, but the Shadow Pack, Shadowland, sorry, I'm going back to the DC Shadow Pack here, my fault. But the Shadowland really killed a lot of what they'd been working up to. And that's when I guess Marvel's like, hey, Mark Waid, Joe Q is a, you know, he loves Daredevil. That's well known. And I don't think he was going to let that character fail. So he called out the big guns. He called in Mark Waid. He called in some great artists. And now the character's up and just, you know, he's really kicking butt.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring, since you mentioned Shadowland, I'm going to bring it back full circle. Book I want back, Moon Knight.
Moon Knight. And, okay, you go ahead. Tell me a little bit about why. And then ask me about my experience with Moon Knight.
Okay. Well, it was just sort of brief. I didn't really read much of the last book that was canceled. I picked a few issues up, but I'm not crazy about the photographic art, so I dropped it. Name the artist again.
Was it Maleev that did it, or what? Is Bendis, yeah. Maleev deal?
Yeah, Bendis Maleev, and I liked it well enough. And then I sort of jumped on towards the middle of it, and then I heard Pretty Quick was ending. And because I wasn't crazy about the art, and I knew it was ending, I was like, I'm just not going to continue, you know, to get this. But when I was a kid, I read quite a bit of Moon Knight. I loved anything he crossed over with Punisher, I would get, and then that kind of led me on to liking Moon Knight. I mean, I think we're through like 5 or 6 volumes of Moon Knight, but I would like to see him back in some capacity. I think he's a character like Daredevil that, given the right artist and writing, could do well. I think the photographic art hurt it, to be honest with you. I know some people that liked it, but Wade's got such strong art with Daredevil. I think a book like Moon Knight could benefit from some more traditional art.
You definitely got to find the right writer for that one. Now, when you were reading it, I forget who was writing it when I jumped in. I was sick as a dog at one point when I was living in Roanoke still. And for some reason, I was like, oh, I'm out of it. I'm going to go buy like 5 trades of Moon Knight. I've never read it. Is he always that depressing? He's the hero that he can't get a leg up. He's so self-destructive. He's saving the day, but God knows how. And it's just, I mean, is he always like that?
I think so. I mean, some of the older things that I have in my collection from I guess even this, I want to say probably early 80s is the earliest I have. And then I have some mid 80s to 90s. But yeah, he's kind of a rich jerk that saves the day. But you're right, ultimately just keeps shooting himself in the foot for whatever reason.
Well, he's got multiple personalities, right?
Bendis brought that out. I don't know if he ever necessarily did, but Bendis brought that out in spades.
Okay, so that's something new that they really highlighted on, I guess, with Bendis' run.
Yeah, but before that, there's another volume that I have that sort of alluded to the fact that he had a voice in his head, but not the whole multiple personality thing, like
right.
Many voices.
Well, I knew he was bestowed with the power of a god sometimes. It just depends. It's a really weird character that definitely needs a direction and something to set it on track and get people familiar with him. And because you look at me, you know, you're familiar with him, and you liked how he was at one point. Now, if they could familiarize that character, say, give it the Fraction treatment we got in Defenders just now,
yeah.
Get us inside his head, no matter how messed up it may be, but get us to know him.
Right.
And I think it could be great. I mean, the character design, I've always liked it. I've always looked at that character and said, wow, he looks like a real bad bad guy. You don't mess around with him, Moon Knight. But I would say this. I'm going to advise this to anyone who's sick. Don't go buy 5 trades of Moon Knight because you're going to get sicker. I had to read a whole lot of Happy Scrappy Little Pup after that just to get right again.
That would bring up an interesting subject. What? Maybe we'll do that next week. What should you read when you're sick?
Oh, beautiful. All right. We'll put that down on the list of things to do. That sounds great.
Yeah, definitely write that one down. Well, we're running out of time here. I wanted to try to keep this in the 45-minute range, and we're right at 46 minutes, so that's good timing. For those of you that don't know our sponsors, I just want to say a couple quick things about them. StashMyComics.com is a site that helped me get started in podcasting. I approached them, and they helped me get the StashMyComics.com podcast off the ground, and now I'm sort of just a producer for that. I do hop on occasionally, but want to give those guys a shout out and the site. You should definitely check it out. If you want to catalog your comic book collection, it's free to do. And then there's forums and blogs, and I mean, the site has grown tremendously, and it's all done with a tremendous amount of heart. It's just people that love comics that put their time and effort into this for nothing other than the joy of you know, reading comics and being a part of something with other people who enjoy reading comics. It's just a nice community. And, of course, B&D Comics, if you are in the Roanoke, Virginia area, you should definitely check out that shop. It's the number one shop. It's been going for 30 years, which is impressive these days for a comic book shop.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased because I was an employee there, but my I can't say enough good things. You're in good hands. I haven't worked with more honest people. I've worked in the U.S. military. I guess you can't really – I don't know if I want to compare that or not, but, I mean – when I went in the military, I thought it was going to be, you know, all Cub Scouts, like everybody's got this honor about them. But I mean, and I've worked in different mediums where I thought honesty was going to be the forefront. And it's interesting to me that I work at B&D Comics, and I mean, they have a level of integrity there. They're going to, anything that you need, they're going to get it. Any problems you got, they'll solve it. I mean, that's just not coming from a worker there. That's coming from someone who still shops there. And I'm very comfortable in knowing my books are going to get there. I'm going to get let in on some great things. And it's just always a fun time.
Yeah, definitely. If you have a local comic book shop, go there and support it. Even if you have to pay a little bit more for your books, it's just a great experience. And it's a dying art. You know, let's not buy everything from the internet. If you can go to your comic book shop, get out, enjoy the fresh air, take a ride, and go buy some books. It's part of the experience. It's part of what makes comic books fun. So we'll leave it with that. Make sure you go to our website, ape4comics.com, and subscribe to the podcast. But we will be on iTunes as well. So if you do a little search there, you can find us that way too. We'd like to thank you guys for listening. We will see you next week. Bye-bye. Neil, you have anything to add?
Oh, yeah. Neil before Zod.
There you go. I'm gonna go to the house.